could block passage. The mining town here was independent, although it paid taxes to the spires. Most dark elves hated the sun, so trying to rule territory was too much effort. Nerevia had been shocked when the spires had intervened in the war between the Federation and the Empire. She sat at a bar. A thin purple scarf covered her amethysts, although she wore black cloth over them as well, just in case she lost the scarf. Revealing herself to be a champion out here was dangerous. To the locals, the only dark elf champions roaming around outside were hunters, and hunters generally meant death. Nerevia attracted a few looks. Most were interested in her assets. A few were not. Nobody approached her. She bought some crappy mulled wine and took a seat in the corner. Almost to the minute, her contact walked in. She dressed like Nerevia, although with fewer weapons. Lots of curvy dark skin showing, shoulder-length white hair, dark leather gloves and boots, a scarf covering her neck and collarbone. Every eye in the tavern followed her, and most stared at her ass, which was barely covered by the leather cloth she wore over her crotch. To Nerevia, the part that mattered most were her piercing green eyes. Astra's eyes carried the weight of centuries in them. "Why are you scheming?" Astra asked as she sat down opposite Nerevia. She spoke in the native tongue of the dark elves. One of the bar staff came up and took her order. Nerevia was pretty sure that wasn't supposed to happen. She was doubly sure most customers were expected to pay for their drinks, and Astra appeared to receive her goblet of mulled wine for free. Astra was the tri-gem champion of the Aurelian Spires. She had also trained Nerevia as a champion, among other things.
"Why do you think I'm scheming?" Nerevia whined.
"Usually you just brag or gossip." Astra kicked her feet up. "It's been fun lately. You bore me most days."
"You used to keep me up late to show me your sex toy collection," Nerevia replied.
Astra stared at her. She coughed.
"Spoken with Nathan recently?"
"Not about that."
"Recently?"
"Ever. I'm not going to tell him about your magic dildos."
Nerevia rolled her eyes when Astra frowned.
"Holy shit. Is that why you responded so fast? You want to take little Nathan out for a joyride? He's grown a spine lately, and apparently learned how to make every beastkin on Domar cream themselves on command. But damn, never thought you'd stoop this low."
"Don't fuck with me," Astra growled as she leaned forward.
Her tits knocked her wine over.
"Damn it!"
A few minutes later, they resumed. The goblet had been replaced, and the spill cleaned up. This time, she paid for her wine. Her spell had worn off. Astra looked around, then lowered her voice.
"He fought a messenger."
"So did I," Nerevia whined.
A roll of the eyes was her reply. "Bitch."
"You're the second person recently to freak out about him," Nerevia said.
She clicked her tongue.
"Is it really that big of a deal?"
"Yes," Astra said flatly. "Second?"
"Another bastion talked up Nathan's sorcery. Which doesn't make sense, given he barely messed around with it before he became a bastion."
Nerevia downed her wine and tried to flag down somebody for more, but was ignored. Astra succeeded in her place.
"Is their sorcery so amazing that you could feel it and basically shit your pants forever?"
"Yes," Astra said with a broad smile. "You're selling him hard."
"I don't fucking get you."
The younger dark elf scratched her neck beneath her scarf, feeling uncomfortable.
"Don't you like being on top? I want Nathan because he's hot shit, and I think he's going to explode and turn Tarban into a pancake in the middle of a lake. Maybe he'll do some fun shit to me in bed. But what do you get out of being turned inside out by his man-meat?
Astra rolled her eyes.
Don't worry about me. Enjoy your youth.
Such a bitch. Nothing ever changed.
So, what do you want? Astra asked again.
I need to meet some apparatchik in the Jorman Spire.
Astra narrowed her eyes.
Not a good time. Trial's starting soon.
That's for the crazy old man, right, Tonius?
Something clicked in Nerevia's mind.
I know something you want to know about that.
You already told me everything.
Oh, no. It's not about him. It's about the man you want to rail the shit out of you.
Given Astra didn't deny it, Nerevia took that as a win.
If you like the info, I want access to the spires, she said.
You won't get what you want,
Astra shook her head.
But fine, access, nothing more.
The Emperor is sending Nathan in his place to the trial,
Nerevia said. Astra froze. Her eyes widened. Even her breathing stopped. If Nerevia imagined it, she felt she could smell something. But that was being mean. She didn't even know what Astra wanted from Nathan. Given the Trigem's predilections, she might just want to fight Nathan. There were stories that Astra once bathed in the blood of hundreds of rebels that she executed. Then again, the stories about Astra suggested she built the damn spires brick by brick, or that she single-handedly chased the fairies out. She was old, and people created dumb stories about her all the time to amuse themselves.
I will help you, Astra said.
She sighed.
But you will regret it. He will bring trouble.
Nerevia stared at Astra. Then she smiled.
Oh, the trial is that soon? Even better. I've been looking forward to some one-on-one time with Nathan.
Chapter 14.
Nathan left Alaik a few days after the Diet session ended. Little of consequence happened. While the palace was no longer overrun by nobles, Alice found herself flooded with paperwork from the aftermath. Alaik was the nerve center of much of the Empire's bureaucracy. All the changes to law, policy, and tax flowed from the palace. The Emperor focused his personal efforts on the peace treaty and recalling the Imperial Army, leaving Alice to handle the countless other affairs. Nathan felt that the Emperor's strategy was a little on the nose. By handling the peace treaty himself, the Emperor became a lightning rod for negativity from the nationalists. While many welcomed peace, plenty didn't. At the same time, Alice had plenty of time to integrate herself into the workings of the Empire. Countless nobles, bastions, champions, officials, and military officers would meet the Imperial Princess. The meetings would be boring, but Alice was a beautiful woman with a sharp mind, and she would leave a strong impression on a lot of people she needed support from in the future. That helped Nathan and Alice's plans to ingratiate her to as many nobles as possible while keeping negative attention away from her.
You say it's a little on the nose, but I hadn't realized it,
Anna grumbled, as they stopped at her manor in Trontia, the capital of her former county.
One day you'll stop saying you're bad at politics and I'll be out of a job.
That's not going to happen, Nathan said dryly.
Only because you're a stubborn mule,
she smirked.
You are a lot better at spotting schemes than you give yourself credit for. Any particular reason why?
He frowned and looked around. Anna had relocated to Tardis, so her old manor was unoccupied. A few townspeople watched them from a distance. Fire poked her head out from the carriage, before being pulled back in by Sunstorm. Paranoid, Nathan cast a few wards. Anna stared at him.
I learned the hard way, he said. I'm no stranger to civil wars.
Ah, right. She ran a hand through her hair. I'm still getting used to this. Nothing's changed, but it's kind of weird to think that you're not actually a count from the Empire. It does explain a lot. Everything, really. Then Anna gave him an odd look. If you've changed the future, is it normal for things to still be so familiar to you?
Apparently, he said, then frowned. But this is different. What happened before is that past events accelerated. This is different. Things seem familiar, but they're not.
I think that's just experience, Anna said.
Most likely.
She pulled him in for a kiss, then he bade her farewell. Fire remained with her. Then Nathan returned to Garrick Pass. Anna planned to join him shortly, but she needed to prepare Trontia for her brother. Now that the war with Trefome had ended, she planned to hand over her old county to him so she could focus on ruling the duchy. Garrick Pass remained Nathan's base of operations. After so many weeks away, he was glad to be back. The double layer of walls of the fortress loomed over his carriage as he approached, as did the keep at the top of the hill. When Nathan had arrived here, the fortress had been a ruin. It defended a narrow mountain pass that was the only large navigable passage through the Garrick Mountains for days. These days, its strategic position was drastically reduced, but its political one had only increased further. Anna's duchy extended to the east and west of the mountains. Castle Tardis, Fort Tobram, and Vera's old tower defended the eastern side, should there ever be a problem. On the western side, there were countless smaller forts and mage towers that Nathan had reactivated over the last year. His first task upon returning was to explain to both Fae and Seraph his secrets. Everyone else knew, after all. Fae found out within an hour, as she tracked him down and demanded that he brush her hair and tail. He explained the extra details about the messenger and how everything had gone wrong in his world. The cat girl simply shrugged it off and told him to focus on brushing out her tail. Narime was going to be pissed when she found out about Faye's response. In the end, the fox had never made a guess about Nathan's secret, and now Faye didn't care about the extra details. The next day, he met with Seraph in his office. No matter how much larger Garrick Pass became, he kept his office the same size. It had a desk for him to work at, plus a larger table and chairs for others to sit around. Otherwise, it was nearly empty. To Nathan, it was a cozy little hole to sequester himself away in. Right now, he felt cornered by Seraph as she sized him up.
So, you're from a future where everything went awry due to the invasion of the Federation. Every nation collapsed, and demons overran the world. You know almost all of us from this past timeline, but you've come back in time far enough that we're different to our old selves. Also, Sen and Sunstorm came back with you, Seraph summarized. Oh, and I nearly forgot, she laughed. You're working with a messenger.
That about sums it up, yes, Nathan said, his hands folded in front of him.
Really?
Seraph asked. Eyebrows raised. Why do you think I have so much experience as a bastion? I knew how to override the Federation's binding stone wards because I have methods to decrypt them from the future. That knowledge is also how I predicted your attack, he said. Ignoring him, Seraph instead rose and inspected the map on the wall. Almost a minute passed before she spoke again.
If what you say is true, that makes me responsible for the destruction of an entire world, she said.
Nathan couldn't see her face from this angle. Her tone sounded oddly flat. No, it doesn't.
It does, she snapped, spinning to face him. Whoever decided to attack doesn't matter. I helped Fierce and Tanius craft a plan involving leyline disruption.
If you hadn't stopped me, the demons would have overrun the entire empire. You specifically said you came to this time to stop me.
Seraph,
don't deny it. Why haven't you killed me, Nathan? If I'm so dangerous.
She glared at him. You didn't exist in my world, he said. She blinked.
What?
Exactly what I just said. He sighed. This is more complicated than I hoped to explain. I'm not in the past. This is an alternate world, with slight differences to mine. You never existed in my world. Your relationship with Narime, where the two of you respect each other but constantly snipe at each other, she never mentioned you once in my world. You may have come up with the ley line disruption in this world, but someone does it, even if you're not around.
With slow, careful steps, Seraph resumed her seat.
You said several things that I find more interesting than your earlier explanation, she said. You're not lying to protect me, are you?
I don't need to lie to you about this. Didn't I already say I'd kill you if you betrayed me?
You did, yes. I appreciated the threat then. I find myself renewing that appreciation now.
She licked her lips.
An alternate world?
I was Nathan Martell in my world. If I went into the past, how could I magically become Nathan Straub while looking almost identical?
Good point, she laughed. Do you know who came up with the plan?
He hesitated, then looked away from Seraph. No, but I have my suspicions.
Vera.
Yes. She might not have intended to cause an invasion, but it would have disrupted communications and made an attack much easier, especially as she was the primary defender of Garrick Pass, Nathan said.
What happened to her? In your world, that is.
Seraph's eyes glittered with a lust for knowledge.
She got cold feet, fought back against the Federation, and died. I knew her as a hero who tried to save the Empire. Reality is significantly different.
Oh.
It was Seraph's turn to sigh.
Well, I guess you get to feel less special as well. She turned on the Federation without you, just like how the plan succeeded without me. That hurt a little, to find out how insignificant I apparently am in the world. I can vanish entirely, and history plays out identically? Perhaps a little too dark for my tastes.
The others don't know this, he warned.
I gathered. You're trying to protect us from knowledge that will hurt us. No matter how well you explain things, this is, I believe one of my previous bastions termed it, an information hazard. It's the reason why you bastions keep so many secrets. The things you know aren't merely unsettling, but can do great harm to us and others, Seraph said. There are things that people don't need to know.
I'm not sure many bastions need to know them either, Nathan remarked.
How many bastions ever learn the things you do, Nathan? Isn't that why Leopold is so antagonistic to others? Because he doesn't trust the intelligence of most bastions with the knowledge he has.
She had a good point.
And in the end, you know enough that you chose to work with a messenger and betray the goddess. A normal person would say that you've realized your information hazard.
Seraph smiled at him.
Fortunately, I'm not a normal person. I'm quite excited to see where this goes.
That's it? Excitement? You're not going to challenge me? He asked.
Over what? My decisions in life are far from perfect. You're actively trying to improve things, even if you're using questionable means. That's admirable. More so than what I did with my life. So no. This doesn't change anything. I'm still your loyal champion, Nathan.
She left him to ruminate on those words. Now firmly ensconced in his fortress, Nathan returned to his day-to-day duties. He had 4 demonic portals to oversee, plus another bastion to train. A lot of things needed to be done before he left for the spires. Not that the dark elves appeared to be in a hurry to summon him. The ambassador, Sarive, would show himself when ready. Until then, Nathan ignored the issue. For the time being, Nathan focused on his immediate issue, dealing with the aftermath of the Diet. As expected, soldiers and beastkin returned home en masse. Few of them came from Garrick, but that didn't stop them from moving here. Nathan was recruiting at a time when many nobles weren't. He was upgrading defenses, undertaking engineering projects, and reinforcing the duchy. People who were out of work flocked to him. That put more pressure on his plans and finances. Long nights were spent with Kuda and Seraph to keep things running smoothly. He left a lot of the portal management to Faye, and the politics to Narime. Kiana familiarized herself with the castle and acclimated to her enhancement. While enhancing her, her ecstasy-filled sigh, dopey eyes, and slack tail and ears had done things to his crotch that he kept secret from her. Sen and Faye had teased her about it, but they both helped her settle in. His next problem was simpler, defending the portals. Since the Cascade, there hadn't been any large invasions. Nathan doubted that was a sustainable position. Garrick Pass lay dormant. The twins had whined about the world being too stable, which meant they couldn't invade until something went wrong. That was precisely the worst time they could invade. Both Fort Tobram and Castle Forselberg saw constant small invasions, as they remained unstable after the Cascade. Neither had shown signs of a messenger emerging, but they weren't decreasing in demonic energy with each invasion. Nathan didn't know what was happening to them. Castle Tardis was the simplest, and he considered himself fortunate that it hadn't been affected by the Cascade. It had been invaded once since the Cascade, and appeared normal. The downside was that it wasn't connected to the other fortresses by a gateway, so traveling there needed to be done by horseback. If civil war broke out, Nathan needed to defend his portals and fight a war. He saw several ways to handle this. One night, he summoned Faye and Narime to his office to discuss it. He sat in his chair, fiddling with a pen while staring at the map on the wall. Faye munched on a huge sandwich, filled with a variety of smoked meats and slathered in gravy. Opposite her, Narime nursed a bottle of sake. Nathan refused her offer of a cup. Maybe he'd take her up on it later tonight. "Faye, lean over your plate," Nathan said, watching as a huge drop of gravy built up on the bottom of her sandwich. The cat girl blinked at him, then leaned forward. The dollop splashed on her plate. She yelped, jumped backward, and nearly knocked over her chair. "You realize that's only gravy, don't you?" Narime said, staring at Faye in disbelief. "I didn't expect it," Faye mumbled. She bit into her sandwich with a sour face, but quickly cheered up. "Why are you even eating at this time?" the fox asked.
"Narime, you've been my champion for how long now?"
"Faye eats when she eats. Don't question it." Nathan shook his head, although he did notice that she was eating more these days.
"True," Narime said.
They moved on to the meeting, ignoring the pouting cat girl.
"I need to shore up the portals. I don't really have a time frame other than soon," he said.
"This is for when civil war breaks out," Narime confirmed.
"Yes."
Faye perked up, freezing in place. Nathan ignored her and continued.
"I can't afford to leave powerful champions in 4 fortresses, 5 if we include Vera's portal, during a huge war. There's also the risk that other bastions will ignore their own portals, allowing demons to break through. That happened before. It allows cascades to destroy nations overnight."
Narime gasped. "I hadn't..." Her eyes closed.
"Did that happen in Kurai? When we flocked to defeat the messenger, demons sprung up across the entire peninsula at once. We thought it to be some sort of wicked trap.
a scheme the messenger created to defeat us. But...
It was a scheme by the messenger, but not what you think. Messengers can trigger cascades once they're out in the world, as they have some way to control and interfere with binding stones and portals.
Nathan grimaced.
The only solution is to be strong enough to both fight a messenger and defend your portals. If you ignore the messenger, they'll wipe you out one by one. If you can't defend your portals, then demons overrun everything, and more messengers appear.
It took the combined forces of almost every other nation to defeat the messenger that appeared in Kurai, and they never closed the portals there,
Narime said.
How do we prepare? How do we defend our portals without champions?
She raised an eyebrow and smirked at him.
You're not thinking of replacing us, are you?
Face squawked, and her ears and tail stood up on end.
He's not! Are you, Nathan?
No, I'm not.
He wished he could pat Face's head, given how frazzled her cat ears looked. I have a few ideas. I want your opinions. They both nodded at him. He waited until Faye cleaned up the gravy she spilled due to the motion before continuing.
First, I need more champions, and to strengthen the ones I have, he said. Not every champion needs to be extremely strong or capable. As harsh as it sounds, sometimes a lifelong mono gem or duo gem is better than holding out for the absolute best.
Is that a vote of confidence in us?
Narime asked, raising an eyebrow.
I think all of you can become trigems. I know both of you have the potential, he said.
Faye blushed, while Narime smiled at him.
Champions are officers. They are respected when it comes to handling portals, and can control panic. If a weak invasion happens during the war, sometimes I don't want to send you or Faye to handle it.
But one of Faye's knights, with a monogem amethyst?
I'd be happy to give her command if she proves worth it, he explained.
Narime nodded slowly.
That explains a lot about how you're training the knights, and why Faye is doing most of the training, and Sunstorm only a small number. They'll become lieutenants, and Faye and Sunstorm their commanders.
Faye's eyes widened.
Yes, he said. Naturally, that means I need to make both Faye and Sunstorm duo gems. They're both ready for it. I just need the gems and magical catalysts.
Ah, your deal with the mages.
The fox frowned.
You want my opinion on things, but it seems you've already done everything. Nathan, tell me the truth. How much is there left to do?
He winced. I'm mostly looking for holes in my plans. The mages supply gems and magical catalysts. I'm hoping they'll also help develop methods to spot invasions in advance, although I'll need to personally detect messengers. In the long term, I also want a better method of teleportation.
Really? What's so dangerous about gateways?
Narime asked.
Let's say a messenger invades the spires, Nathan said. They break out, then head for Castle Forselberg. Or maybe Leopold's castle, or somewhere in Trefome. It doesn't really matter, but if there's a gateway there...
Oh, Narime closed her eyes. The messenger goes through the gateway, then appears in the heart of the Empire, or Trefome, or Arcadia, and wreaks havoc.
Yes.
Nathan, how did you defeat your messenger so easily if they are so smart? One destroyed Kurai. You talk about them as if they are nation-destroying machines that know all of our weaknesses.
Narime looked at him, her expression dark and eyes concerned. He coughed, unsure of what to say. Faye, unfortunately, chose this as the time to speak up.
The succubus seemed kind of stupid, strong but dumb. She seemed more interested in having sex with Nathan than defeating him.
The cat girl glared at him. Narime raised an eyebrow at him.
I'm sorry? But given how you came here...
No, he said flatly. Laura is a succubus. If she had her way with me, I would have been reduced to a drooling idiot.
Laura?
She introduced herself, he said.
Ah, how normal of a nation-destroying threat,
Narime said with a nod. Her tails curled around herself. He rolled his eyes. Messengers are a weird lot. Most of them tell you their name. Sometimes they try to tell you their entire life story before you kill them. Kind of weird, that. Especially as it sounded like the messengers had been lying to him when they did that. None of them had mentioned anything like Kadria's world. Had they been playing some sort of weird joke? Narime changed the subject.
To summarize, you want to recruit champions from Fae's Knights, promote Fae and Sunstorm to Duo Gem champions, and presumably Kiana as well. Develop methods to detect invasions before they start, and move away from gateways for long-distance teleportation.
Yes, he said.
What about Fire? She asked.
I need to investigate her mind when I transfer her across, he said. Fae pouted at the mention of Fire, but surprisingly, it was the cat girl who had a new idea.
Why aren't you recruiting new champions? You know the dark elf Astra? Sen and Sunstorm told me. When we go to the spires, shouldn't we talk to her about helping us? And what about Nerevia?
Ah, Astra, Nathan grimaced.
That's not a nice face, Narime said.
Am I that easy to read? He asked.
The only time you looked that grim was when Kiana tried to ask you about herself, she said. I take it she died.
Everyone did, he said darkly.
Not like that.
No, he admitted, dodging the question. But you're right, Fae. If I get the chance, strengthening our alliance with the Dark Elves is a high priority. At a minimum, they need to defend the Haukim Desert when civil war breaks out.
And Nerevia? Fae asked.
That depends on her, he hedged. I'll pick a fight with Tarban, but I'm not dealing with her dumb games. She's a headache, and I don't do a lot of the things she wants done to herself.
Fae nodded several times, then smiled. Then she nodded again and finished off her sandwich.
I'm sorry, I think I missed something, Narime said.
Nathan mimed using a whip and made a whip-cracking noise. Like that, but on her. And usually with something much worse.
Narime didn't say a word.
If that's your plan, then I think my main priority will be identifying new champions, she said. Seraph is practically sleeping in her office due to how much work she has, so I'll spare her this job.
He winced. Thanks. I'll try to take some work off Seraph's plate.
You can try, but I doubt she'll let you, came the reply.
Narime grimaced.
There is such a thing as being too driven, Nathan. You lead by example.
He blinked. For some reason, Kadria's description of Seraph came to mind. The messenger had described Seraph as a minion who reveled in everything he did. Narime's words only proved that. He had lucked out with Seraph. If there was anybody he needed to reward after this, it was her. Actually, he should probably reward her during this. Unlike his other champions, she didn't share his bed, so she didn't get regular rewards. The next few weeks went by quickly. His plans were long-term and would take months or even years. Hopefully not too many years. He needed champions soon, and they needed training before they could use gems or safely accept enhancements. Fortunately, Fae and Narime identified a number of Beastkin knights that appeared to be suitable. Nathan let Narime conduct the enhancement training, as she had experience from her time in Kurai. He only needed to apply the mild enhancements every so often. The mages arrived midway through summer. Surprisingly, Haram led them. They came in a massive convoy, laden down with enough supplies that Nathan assumed they were coming to conduct war.
Don't you have a tower to run? Nathan asked Haram as the older mage approached him.
I am running it, the mage said with a smile. He pushed his glasses up his face. This isn't an opportunity to be wasted. The data you shared with us proved exceptional, foundational even. I believe an entirely new branch of magical science can be built from it, if we can expand on it.
Good. That's what we both want, Nathan said, although he was inwardly amazed at the size of the response. Falmir and Trefome had taken years to get their magical scientists into gear, and much of their initial research came from refugees from the Federation and Arcadia.
I can tell that you remain surprised. The fact is that you have the Emperor's blessing, and nobody has accused us of heresy.
Haram stretched his arms out.
It's a common saying to make hay while the sun shines. I'm not wasting my sun, and neither will the rest of the lodge.
Nathan nodded. You'll need a research base. While I can put you up in Garrick Pass and have made extra space, I don't think you want to work here permanently.
No, we prefer some privacy, and although you can rely on the Binding Stone's power, we will need a cairn to conduct many of our rituals.
Haram paused, clearly waiting for Nathan to suggest a location.
There are two available cairns. Vera has recently left her tower, and she's willing to let you use it. There's also a cairn near Trontia. You might want to use both.
Excellent. We'll set up in Lady Nair's tower, given it will have defenses and facilities.
Haram smirked.
I also suspect you desire for us to shore up your defenses. Officially, we take no place in the coming storm. Unofficially,
the maid shrugged.
If our collaboration proves fruitful, then the lodge may carefully consider its position regarding the next emperor.
Nobody ever said that mages were stupid. Before he left, Haram produced two small boxes and handed them to Nathan.
Two sapphires, the mage said, tapping the left box, and several amethysts and diamonds in the other, although of slightly lower quality than usually set aside for bastions. My apologies for that, but not everybody in the lodge agrees with this.
Hence why the deal was leaked so fast.
Indeed, Haram sighed. I will continue to search for an onyx. Now that I'm here, I suspect I will have better luck talking to my colleagues in the Amica Duchies. I believe that is their official name now.
With that, the mages left, although they left behind enough magical catalysts for Nathan to do some work of his own. He added a gateway to Castle Tardis. To celebrate its creation, he spent the night with Anna. Once again, he felt that strange feeling of being spied on. This time, he didn't even find fire lurking outside. Kadria's door continued to follow him into Anna's palace in Tardis. Now that he had the gems and the catalysts, Nathan realized he couldn't put it off any longer. When he returned to Garrick Pass, he took fire with him. The time had finally come for him to take control of fire. More importantly, he needed to give Fay her second gem.
Chapter 15.
Fay stood in front of Nathan, her bushy black tail wagging back and forth. They stood at the far end of the courtyard behind the castle. Nobody else was outside, and the nearby sparring circles and training yards remained empty. The morning sun glittered on the nearby mountaintops. At this time, only the guards on patrol would be out. Everybody else was still inside. The cooks prepared breakfast around this time, and everybody generally trooped down for their morning meal before beginning their day shift. Nathan usually joined them, but he wanted to take care of the gemming ceremony first. Two horse girls sat nearby at a table. A tray of fresh food had been dug into by Kiana, and she prepared breakfast for the four of them. Fay's tail wagged as she watched the other beastkin, her eyes on the mouth-watering food. The first harvest had passed, and a lot of the grains had been processed,
Freshly baked breads and pastries became a common sight at meals, and the castle's bakers experimented more. The first apples had come into season, replacing a lot of the berries and forest fruits from spring. And, of course, there was a lot more meat. The days of endless smoked meats were behind Nathan. Today's spread looked larger than it was. Most of it was for Faye, who would probably go into the dining hall for seconds anyway. Of note were thick slices of pork belly, a dozen eggs, thick brown bread, and a huge apple pull-apart loaf drizzled with a white glaze. Nathan felt that the apple loaf was a bit too much for dessert. If he ate any, he'd probably fall asleep when he sat down in his office. Given the way Kiana eyed him, he wondered if that was her plan. Faye kept throwing glances at the food, while expectantly looking at the glittering sapphire in his hand. "We can eat later," Nathan said. "Kiana is still preparing things." "Fine," Faye whined. Her ears and tail drooped, despite her words. Kiana was actually preparing the food. A magical device powered an open flame, over which she placed a flat steel griddle. Then she laid out four slices of thick brown bread and covered them with pork belly and cheese. Finally, she cracked four eggs beside the bread. Some of the egg white ran into the bread, which soaked it up. Breakfast promised to be very unhealthy, Nathan noted. "Before you get your next gem, we need to discuss what ability you get," Nathan said, drawing Faye's attention from the food.
"Eh? We're not talking about the gem itself? Don't I get to choose?"
Faye tilted her head to one side in confusion. "No. That's why the decision for your first gem mattered so much. All gems must match for a champion. You can't mix and match," he explained. "There's been theories about how to do it. Unfortunately, they're only theories. Like the idea of changing a champion's abilities, or finding a way to turn one back into a normal person. Nobody had ever found a way. Nathan did wonder if he might be able to do something himself using ascended magic, but meddling with his own champions was dangerous. The gems linked with the minds of champions. If he made a mistake during a gemming ceremony, there wasn't a second chance. The champion died if they were lucky. If they were unlucky, their mind was melted, and they became a toy for their bastion. Nathan refused to go down that route or be responsible for that.
Didn't you choose my ability last time?" Faye asked.
She touched the sapphire implanted in her collarbone and smiled.
"I did, but I also told you that you chose it this time. The reason I picked was because your first gem ceremony is always the riskiest. Now that I know how your body and mind react, I can safely give you a far wider range of abilities," he said. "Not anything, but I have a pretty good idea of what will and won't work."
"Huh," Faye narrowed her eyes. "So what abilities I can get depends on my bastion?"
"Yes," Nathan chuckled. "If it didn't, there would be a lot more tri-gems in the world. Most champions are held back by the potential of their bastions, but even then, many abilities are esoteric."
"What's that mean?"
Fire asked from nearby, her ears pricked up. Nathan frowned. He needed to be careful about how he explained this.
"Gem abilities are powered by the binding stones, which means they can do anything that a binding stone can. That includes ascended magic."
Nathan paused, trying to think of good examples.
"Sunstorm's Onyx gem uses spatial magic. Narime's second sapphire gem interferes with magic directly. And, of course, there's the legend of Astra."
"The Dark Elf," Fire said,
her red eyes almost razor sharp.
"I heard she's part of a train of champions from the spires. Because she's always covered up, nobody can tell when they replace her with the next champion. She's a symbol."
Nathan tried not to laugh. He believed that stupid propaganda story once. "No, Astra is real," he explained. "The specifics of her third gem are unknown,
But even Ifrit agrees that she likely has some sort of ability that grants her eternal life. If a gem ability can transcend the limits of mortality, there's not much they can't do.
Except prevent death, Nathan thought darkly. Not even Astra had survived the fall of the spires.
Fire stared at him with wide eyes. Then she scowled.
Then why don't we all get eternal life?
Because nobody knows how to create the gem ability, Nathan said dryly. If the Empire knew how, it would have a dozen legendary trigems like Astra.
Is it her gems? Kiana asked. The stories get them mixed up. Sometimes she has amethysts, other times diamonds or emeralds. One of them gave her a rainbow gem, but I felt that was cheating.
Nathan nearly told them what gem Astra had, but stopped himself. He hadn't seen her gems, for one thing. Astra never showed anybody during her visits. If he got it wrong, because something was different in this world, just like how Narime's abilities had changed, then he'd look like an idiot and make Fire suspicious.
Well, maybe we'll find out when we visit the spires, he said, then changed the subject.
But my point was that the research that a Bastion does determines what they can do for their champions. I've been doing a lot of esoteric research myself, so I think I know a few more things.
Faye nodded enthusiastically, while the horse girls simply eyed him curiously.
The eggs had cooked, so Kiana slipped them on top of the cheese, which had begun to melt. She cracked some pepper on top, but continued to wait. While she did, Fire began to make some simple porridge. The horse beastkin loved porridge. Faye destroyed entire platters of meat, although she ate basically anything. But Nathan never underestimated the ability of horse girls to make entire bags of grains vanish if you gave them something to mix it with, or as some sort of ration.
Do you have some ideas for abilities? Because I have one that I don't think you'll like.
Faye pressed her fingertips together and gave him an upturned look. Nathan had a pretty good idea what ability she would propose.
There are three main approaches you can take, he explained. The first is to double down on your current ability and its strengths and weaknesses. The second is pick an ability that broadens your skill set. And the third is to use an experimental ability that tries to cover your current weakness, but doesn't broaden your skills.
Faye made an O face.
I can't just get stronger, can I? Because it's a sapphire.
That's right. Sapphires only provide gem abilities. That's your weakness, actually. You're a greedy little kitten that sucks up my magical energy as though there's no end to it, he said with a smirk.
Faye gave him a seductive look.
I can suck up some other things like there's no end to it.
Silence.
Nathan nodded his head at the peanut gallery, and Faye rolled her eyes.
I'm allowed to flaunt my status, she declared.
Then she pointed at Kiana and Fire, who stared at her.
You're not allowed to be greedy.
Nathan rubbed the bridge of his nose, then moved on. Your current ability is extremely powerful. Focusing on it isn't a bad idea, but it limits what you can do. In serious situations, you can't be far away from me. Refilling your energy takes hours at a binding stone.
Truthfully, he had never had a powerful champion like her in his original world. His three trigems had been largely independent, and almost all his duo gems had been the same. Those that did burn out fast tended to be used in specific tactics that favored their abilities. But Faye was Nathan's leading champion. He wasn't going to shove her in the back because her gem abilities required babysitting. At the same time, he didn't want to tell her to choose another path, because that's not the way he did things. After all, the way he did things had failed horrifically in his world. Slow and steady had not won the race. Maybe he needed champions with far more power that burned out fast, instead of those with a lot of independence and endurance.
focusing on my flames, Faye trailed off as she tapped her chin. Her tail wagged behind her slowly, pausing at the end of each motion. My biggest weakness right now is range. If I can't get close to somebody, I'm useless. Could I teleport? Or shoot lances of flame like Sen?
Her eyes lit up.
Or maybe summon pillars of flame, or huge explosions like you did in the invasion, or...
It sounds like you get the idea, Nathan said. He pressed down on her head to shut her up. Let's talk about the other option. You can take an ability that uses less energy, so you can operate independently or for longer without needing a top-up.
Boring, Faye said.
She grinned.
I like being the one who charges in and turns the demons into a puddle of goo. You have Seraph and Narime and Sen and you and basically everybody else to do the boring part.
You are in command of the knights, he pointed out. She pouted and looked away. For some reason, both horse girls perked up and their tails wagged. A moment later, Kiana looked down at the open-faced sandwiches she was preparing and removed them from the griddle. They still needed a minute to rest.
Maybe I could use Taraka's ability, the nine-tail slash, Faye mumbled. One swing and send out nine slashes at once.
Nathan tried not to groan and failed. He had been right. Her idea had been from that supposedly fictional tri-gem champion. The last option is the experimental one. Nathan coughed. Normally, this should wait until your third gem, but...
But?
Faye asked. Your current gem is much more powerful than I expected. That implies you've acclimated to the binding stone extremely well, he said. It might be worth the risk to do something more interesting. Faye waited patiently. He sighed and gave in. Your flames currently consume magical energy in a rather violent way. What if we make your new gem ability one that interacts with it and lets you absorb magical energy? To him, the idea had been a natural one. Faye could power herself using her enemies. Given the magical nature of demons, she might literally be able to run forever during an invasion. The downside was that it didn't strictly make her more powerful. An ability that let her vaporize a column of demons from halfway across the battlefield made Faye into a true duo-gem champion. Becoming a magical vampire kept her at her current strength, above a mono-gem, but below a duo-gem.
That's... Wow, Faye said, eyes wide. So I could go absolutely crazy with my flames so long as I'm burning things?
That sentence sounded wrong.
I don't think you should say it like that, Fire said with a sharp smile.
Her red eyes curved at the edges.
What an amusing idea!
Nathan gave her an odd look. A moment later, Fire's face lit up, and she turned away, her tail wagging violently. You could, yes, he said to Faye. But all the same problems you currently have apply.
Maybe. But it means I can cover myself in flames way more often if I know it's easier to top up.
She grinned.
How efficient would it be? That's the important part.
I don't know. You seem pretty convinced about this.
It's... She trailed off. I don't like how I need to hold back because I never have enough reserves in my gem to use my ability. But I like being powerful enough to win fights. I don't want to be Seraph, but I do want at least a little bit of her... Faye tilted her head. I forget the word you use for being able to run really far.
Endurance, Kiana said helpfully. You want some of Seraph's endurance.
Yeah, that.
Faye grinned happily. Nathan felt that a decision had been made. The four of them dug into the sandwiches that Kiana had prepared. Faye's vanished in two bites, and she stared despondently at the still-hot griddle. Rolling his eyes, Nathan slapped down pork belly on half the black cooking surface and cracked eggs on the other half. The horse girls tore into the pull-apart, revealing the rich cinnamon and apple filling.
Nathan had been right. This was too much food. He wanted to lie down and take a nap. The eyes on him felt devious and lecherous, but he pushed onward. Kiana and Fire nibbled away while he sipped at a canteen of coffee. Noise drifted from the castle, as morning truly arrived, and everybody drifted from their rooms. Feeling as though he needed to run 10 laps around the castle to burn off all the excess energy in his body, Nathan got up and stretched. Eventually, he got sick of watching Faye demolish the food and dragged her up.
"But there's still more," she choked out around a mouthful of fried egg.
"Eat it after I ram this gem into you," he growled. That came out wrong. Faye swallowed her food and cleaned herself off. Then she straightened up, brushed her long black hair over her shoulders, and presented her chest. Like all champions, she had a small opening in her uniform over her collarbone for her gems to be inserted. The new one was going to be inserted on the opposite side of her current one. Just like last time, Nathan channeled magic from the binding stone. The sapphire exploded with brightness, nearly blinding him. Kiana and Fire shielded their eyes, but continued to watch. Unlike last time, Faye remained calm and focused. She kept taking deep breaths throughout the ritual. Her eyes were clear and held his gaze. The gem slid into her collarbone smoothly, with almost no resistance. It sat flush with her skin, gleaming from the sunlight beaming down on it.
"Wow, that was really easy," Faye said.
She touched the gem. "There's one more step," he said. Then he dove into her mind. Nathan touched Faye's mind more often than those of his other champions. He topped her up far more often, after all. But this was the first time since her monogem ceremony that he'd gone past the initial layer. The tendrils of her mind gripped him as he drifted toward her core. The connection he had with Faye meant he didn't need to fear her mental defenses anymore. The reaction was welcoming rather than aggressive. No, he realized, it was still aggressive, just aggressively sexual. Faye's thoughts lingered on sexual memories of him, rutting, a need to do fun things with him, some interesting fantasies that he suspected Sen was responsible for, an image of Faye with a much larger belly. Nathan frowned. This had happened last time. For whatever reason, a lot of Faye's emotions toward him seemed to be very sexual. He knew she felt much more for him, and that she had other thoughts inside her mind. He hovered at her core, which now had 2 satellites of his power hovering around it. Her mental world was indistinct and strange to describe. Something about these satellites reminded Nathan of something else that he'd been told about recently. Tendrils, he realized. Wasn't this almost identical to how Kadria had described how the mental magic of the succubi worked? The twins had a mental world and were now building a frontier fortress, and were leeching off Nathan's mind in order to remain in this world. This felt similar, as if these satellites were Nathan's frontier fortresses in Faye's mind. They even prevented her mind from keeping him out. The realization bothered him. Was bastion magic identical to that of messengers? Was it all just a form of ascended magic, except he used a binding stone? Nathan gave up trying to puzzle out the answer on his own and moved on. He had a job to do. Faye's thoughts and emotions regarding what she wanted from her ability filtered through him. He plucked out the ones from their earlier discussion and confirmed that she hadn't been lying to him. As expected, she really wanted to copy that stupid slash ability, but there was a grim realization underpinning Faye's thoughts that she should choose something serious and abandon her dream. She hadn't been lying to him, at least not as far as Nathan could tell, which didn't say much, given she'd tricked him about the sapphire in the last gemming ceremony. Ignoring that,
he tuned the gem to the desired ability. It took much, much longer than he expected. Perhaps he had been overeager to give Faye such a strange ability for her second gem. But she never resisted him, and he never felt any pain or damage in the link. Her magical energies remained in balance. Slowly, he made progress tuning the gem. The issue was that he was subtly altering the first gem's ability with the new gem. He had never done this before, but had discussed the theory with Leopold. Hopefully, it worked. Maybe Nathan should have tried this on a champion less important than Faye first. When he retreated from her mind, he found Faye leaning against him. Almost 15 minutes had passed, which was an eternity for a gemming ceremony. Kiana and Fire stood next to him, on the verge of panic.
"You're all right?" Fire asked.
Then she calmed down.
"Don't do that to me!"
Kiana gripped his arm tightly and said nothing, her eyes staring at his chest. Besides feeling tired, Faye was fine. Her gem ability still functioned properly, and they confirmed that it sucked up magic.
"Wow! That felt like my gem ate something," Faye said,
after she used a flame to eat Nathan's fireball.
"Like it grew a mouth and just chomped down on a big hunk of meat."
"Did it give you more or less energy than you used?" he asked.
She tilted her head. "I don't know. I'm topped up, and having two gems makes it hard to tell how strong I am."
He sighed. Something to investigate later.
"Fire, you're next," he said.
"Wow, I'm getting a third gem already?" she asked.
"When did you get so cheeky?" he asked.
She blushed and bounced over to the ritual circle he had prepared earlier.
"I'm ready, my lord. You're finally going to make me yours."
That was more like the Fire he knew. When he reached into her mind, he already knew something was wrong. For one thing, she didn't lash out against him. Even Sunstorm had pushed back, and she trusted him implicitly after Kadria's intervention. Instead, he slid right past the outer layer of her mind and drifted toward her core. This process involved severing the connection to her old bastion and attaching new tethers to his mind. Her mind continued to ignore him. It didn't caress him or press thoughts against him. Instead, it felt unnaturally still. Manicured, almost. Nathan drifted past thoughts and emotions, but he didn't look at them. Something told him that doing so would be a mistake. He didn't know why, but it was just a feeling. Her core looked normal, but felt wrong. He couldn't feel the power in the tethers that led out of her mind. Nathan felt as though he was a figure in a diorama. He knew that everything was fake, but acknowledging this would cause everything to go horribly wrong. Did Fire know ascended magic? Or had she simply found a way to construct powerful mental wards? If so, why didn't they protect her tethers? Nathan felt that he could sever those and reconnect them, as they seemed to be inert. Nathan felt at a crossroads. He wanted to confirm Fire's genuineness before he made her his champion and let her in on the secret. But all of his senses told him that this was a trap. There was something wrong here. Something familiar, even. He assessed his options. If he tried to read her mind, then he risked triggering her mental defenses. He might be strong enough to withstand them, but if she was connected to a messenger, or even worse, another succubus, then he might be attracting attention he didn't want. That option was right out. He lacked evidence that she was connected to a messenger. A quick scan using what little mental magic he knew showed no connections to her mind other than himself and the tethers he saw. But that didn't prove anything. Nathan's own mental world had tethers he couldn't see, after all. Now that he knew mental magic,
the parasitic tendril that the twins had attached to his binding stone had become visible at all times. But Kadria had thousands of tiny tethers attached to him that were only visible when she was using her magic. He had only seen them once. Another succubus could be hiding tendrils like that in Fire's mind. The next option was to pull out and leave Fire as is. But that would upset her. Fire was an ally, and a very important one in the Beastkin. He lacked a reason to annoy her, and doing so on the basis of a bad feeling was kind of stupid. With a civil war on the horizon, he needed her support. Finally, he could convert her to his champion. But he needed to make it thorough. Something about these tethers bothered him. He needed to ensure that his connection wouldn't be broken, even if a succubus had her hooks in the horse girl. So long as he maintained a connection to Fire, he could help her, or deal with her, if something went wrong. Nathan decided on that course of action by process of elimination. Very slowly, he severed the other tethers. They still appeared to be inert. Then he attached his own tethers to her core, forming a champion connection. That should have been the end of it. For good measure, he set up a warning system in her mind. It wasn't anything threatening. The warning system was fairly obvious and supposed to tell him if anybody else intruded. He wanted to do more, but he lacked the knowledge. His training in mental magic was too limited. Most of his ability to form magical and mental tethers was limited to binding stones and ley lines. But he knew someone who had experience in creating them. Fire showed no awareness of Nathan's suspicions. Instead, she was ecstatic about what he'd done. She and Faye celebrated and tried to drag Nathan away for his nap, which would likely involve very little napping and a lot of naked beastkin rubbing against him. Kiana was more restrained. She lacked a gem still. "Soon," Nathan said as he ruffled her hair. She pouted at him. "You're going to the spire soon, aren't you?" He hesitated. "I'll bring your diamonds with me when I do." She perked up. The implication that he'd take her to the spires was clear. After they walked back to the castle, Nathan used some nights as an excuse to shake Fire and Faye off. Faye needed to introduce the new champion to her subordinates, and Fire needed to settle in now that she was officially under him. Nathan had a succubus to talk to. The black door in the back of his office called to him. Chapter 16. Kadria's room was empty, again. Nathan poked around in search of clues, but came up empty-handed. The room didn't even smell of her. Not that he remembered if the room ever smelled like her. The strange door of the twins lingered in the corner. It was made of something called plastic, apparently. Nathan didn't know what that was, and Kadria said he couldn't make it with the technology of his world. He agreed with that conclusion. Despite his best efforts, he failed to understand what the plastic was made of. Creating things using the magic of the binding stone required a basic understanding of the elemental nature of an object. If Nathan didn't know what gold was, then all he'd create was something that looked like gold. The same applied with the strange new elements he found inside the mental worlds of the messengers. At least he had worked out how to create propane gas. Realizing he was stalling, Nathan decided to visit the twins. Kadria was probably talking to them. Maybe she was lonely. Nothing had changed in this world either. The fake sun streamed onto his face, and an eerily peaceful field greeted him. The twins weren't grilling food this time. Instead, they lazed on wooden chairs with strange glowing devices in their hands. Bright colors flashed in front of them, and they seemed engrossed by whatever was happening. They had changed back into their signature dresses, and were showing off as much cleavage as possible. No sign of Kadria. Nathan trotted over to them. "Is this what you do all day?"
can't use the portal still, Laura chirped, not looking up. You're being really boring lately.
Not what I meant, he said. Don't you spy on what I'm doing? Or come up with plans? Or anything? I don't know what you really do in here.
Being a messenger means doing a lot of nothing, usually, Mora said.
She grunted as something happened on her device, and she unsummoned it with a flick of her wrist.
We're not dumb mooks who charge in during the opening scene of the movie in order to show how powerful the heroes are. We destroy entire worlds and nations. Can't do that every day.
Nathan felt pretty glad about that, although their casual approach to death and destruction bothered him. That means you can't do anything while you're here, he said slowly.
Yeah, that's right. I overheard the little goat tell you last time. We're hitching a ride with you.
She pointed her fingers at him.
The upside is that we're the closest messengers to taking you for a nice, long ride. The downside is that we're stuck with you until we break out of the portal and take control of other binding stones.
Nathan thought of the tendril attached to his binding stone. In the end, the invasions are a battle over the binding stones, he said.
Yeah, pretty much. Seems a bit juvenile when you put it that way.
Mora shrugged.
The goat would say something like, they are the nexus of power in this world, and our chaotic flows must be focused through them, or some shit. But basically, we need to take them off you bastions so we can have our fun. They're our ticket into your world.
Mora's impression of Kadria brought a smile to his face. He shook his head afterward. When he looked at her again, she frowned at him.
Where is the flat goat, anyway?
Mora asked. Laura looked up from her device. A moment later, she banished it.
Yeah, where is she? Did you come here looking for her?
The dumber sister asked. Or at least, Nathan imagined Laura as the dumber sister. Mora definitely seemed to know a lot more about what was going on than her sister. I did. You don't know where she is? He clicked his tongue. I didn't think she could just vanish like that. She's always been somewhere. The succubi ignored him. Instead, they both rose from their seats. Lewd grins crossed their faces, and he felt magic press against his mind.
Oh, don't think about her, Laura purred.
Her voice echoed in his mind, as if she were somehow kissing it through his skull.
That's right. The silly little goat isn't here. We are. Think of what fun things we might do,
the other sister cooed. They stood in front of him, but their voices echoed around him, inside him, everywhere. Mental magic, naturally. They messed with his perception to make him hear and perceive things differently, and to give their voices a seductive, ethereal edge. Strength began to leave his limbs. Ghostly fingers rubbed his prick, and it hardened instantly, pressing painfully against his pants. They giggled and stepped closer. Their hands lowered the tops of their dresses, revealing their obscenely huge tits. Close enough, Nathan decided. Instantly, he summoned a mass of magic from his binding stone. The entire world twisted 45 degrees, like a picture being torn by a child. The twins screamed and jumped backward, but Nathan grabbed both of them by the shoulders. Their eyes widened, filling with fear. Their voices slipped out of his mind. He stood there, looking between the two terrified succubi.
I'm not very good at mental magic, but I am very good at casting wards, it seems, he growled. Do that again, and we'll find out how good I really am at mental magic.
They nodded several times, eyes wide. Laura slunk away and cowered in her chair, shoulders hunched. But Mora didn't. She remained in his grasp, staring at him. Those demonic black and red eyes of hers stared into his. Slowly, they narrowed.
Damn. No wonder she's after you,
Mora purred.
You came here to ask her something, right? Why don't you get some help from real succubi, instead of an arrogant little goat?
He pointedly looked at their horns. The twins each had two curly goat horns, and Kadria had four.
Yeah, fuck you. The horns are part of the whole succubus thing.
Mora poked his chest, then hefted her huge rack with her other arm.
I'm talking about these. Even that cat girl of yours doesn't have ones as big as these.
I'm pretty sure normal women don't have breasts so large they shatter their spine with every step,
Nathan drawled.
They're great, right?
Mora grinned.
One of the best parts of being a succubus is that you can reshape your body to some extent. It's a pain in the ass, but it pays off. Dunno why the squirt looks like she does, even if she does have an amazing ass.
Is there a reason you dislike her so much? He asked, changing the topic away from Mora's assets.
I mean, she's a bitch. Plenty of reason to hate her. But come on, sit down. Grab a beer from the cooler. Let's talk. I bet I can help you with whatever your problem is, and tell you why Kadria's a useless slut. It'll be fun, Mora said. We could use some fun, Laura said without looking up. It gets pretty boring playing the same video games for all eternity.
Despite his misgivings, Nathan had no choice. Kadria was missing, and he needed help from a succubus. Plus, he knew so little about the twins. Unlike Kadria, he appeared to have some level of control over them. Until they invaded through the portal again, they weren't that threatening. Although he needed to continue to improve his mental wards, he doubted their next attack would be so weak. Laura's attempt during the invasion had been worse. If they slipped through his defenses, then everything was over. Playing with the twins was a dangerous game, even if the reward appeared to be tantalizingly sweet. Nathan stepped over to a bright blue box on the ground. A multitude of brown bottles sat within it, encased in ice. He reached in and pulled one out. The label was written in a language he didn't recognize, although it appeared similar to the writing in the Empire.
Ha! I didn't know we had German beers in there, Mora said, staring at the bottle of beer in confusion.
How do I open this? Nathan asked.
There was a cap on top, but he suspected he'd break the entire top off while trying to remove it. Mora clicked her fingers, and the cap vanished.
That was one way, he supposed.
After sitting down, he tasted the beer. It was a lager. For whatever reason, it tasted similar to the ones brewed in the Empire over winter, but far cleaner, and it seemed to pop in his mouth.
I guess there are only so many ways to make beer, he said.
And that's where you'd be wrong, Mora said.
Nathan didn't follow up on that statement. Ignorance was bliss sometimes.
So, what exciting shit has happened in the world of Nathan the Almighty? Mora asked.
A beer had appeared in her hand as well, although it somehow made her look far cruder. Then again, crude was a very apt description for the twins, especially Mora.
Don't you pay attention to what's going on outside? He asked.
Can't.
He blinked.
But Kadria,
she growled at him. He rolled his eyes and changed the topic. Clearly, Kadria had a sweeter position than these two busty parasites.
As a bastion, I poke into the mental worlds of my champions. Now that I'm learning about mental magic, I'm realizing how shit I am at it, he said,
deciding to leave his ego out of things and be honest. This pair were succubi. They knew exactly how competent he was at mental magic. Trying to wave his dick around was an ill-advised proposition.
Not how I'd describe you, Mora said with a raised eyebrow. I mean, he's not that great, Laura mumbled.
You can shit-talk him after you find a way to make him fuck you, the darker sister snapped.
She turned back to Nathan.
We weren't at the top of our game when we invaded, but you did damn well against us. Most bastions use magical artifacts to protect themselves, like the old man did. You're the first one who didn't. I expected you to be enjoying a nice long ride while your champions watched, to be honest.
A magical artifact? That was the first Nathan had heard of such a thing. He knew that Trafome supposedly had some secret anti-succubus weapons, according to Yefela, but he had never seen any.
I'll take the compliment. But the more I learn about ascended magic, the less confident I feel, he grumbled. I'm getting pretty good at wards, but I feel so shallow at everything else. As if I'm learning a little bit of everything, but none of it is useful enough for actual application. I think I need to focus on something.
And mental magic appeared to be the easiest and the most relevant, he thought. He had succubi to teach him, and problems that needed mental magic to solve. If it turned out there was a succubus behind fire, then he'd be ready for her. If he was wrong, then the magic would still be useful against the twins, or to help him with all this political nonsense.
Let's see if I can't give you a Kadria-like response.
Mora grinned as she drank her beer.
What you've realized is that you're in school and learning like a child. A little bit of everything, no depth to anything. You either bury yourself in debt to learn the real stuff, or everybody laughs you out of interviews while you suffer in a shitty home with a deadbeat dad.
I don't think Kadria answers like that, he said dryly. Also, I don't think that really applies to me.
Sure it does. Mora smirked and leaned toward him. You can make a deal with me, and I can help you escape the doldrums of this world, or you continue sucking at mental magic.
Yeah, Nathan didn't think he'd take that deal.
And how do I learn without selling my soul to you? He asked, rolling his eyes.
Fine, Mora said.
She vanished her beer before standing up and walking over to him.
The answer doesn't really change, though. I can teach you how to ruin some minds, but you need to let us in.
No, he said, about to stand and leave.
Wait, she snapped.
He paused, waiting to see if she offered anything of value.
You already let Kadria in, the succubus said. This won't be any different. We don't magically slip past your mental wards. But think about it. Do you really know what that little goat is up to? Do you even know why she brought you here?
Nathan nearly bought into Mara's words. She had a point. He didn't know. But he did remember the recent conversations he had with Kadria. Most of his problems with her came from not asking for her help, and she had promised she was working on something to help him.
She said we're partners, he said,
hoping he wouldn't regret this.
I don't think you're offering the same deal.
With those words, he stood up and walked to the door. Once Kadria returned, he'd badger her into more lessons. A pair of arms latched onto his waist before he left.
Oh, come on, Mora whined. This is so unfair. Look, if I explain some of the basics of mental magic, will you at least promise to think about it? It's so boring in here.
You'll teach me if I think about working with you? He asked, incredulous.
Seriously. Think about it.
Her eyes flashed.
No bullshit. We're already in this world. We can help you way more than Kadria can, once shit goes down.
That got his attention. All right, it's a deal. But you need to explain what you mean by that, he said.
He sat back down and hoped he hadn't made a mistake. Mora pulled out another bottled beer.
This one looked substantially different to the one that Nathan had pulled out himself. He took one sip and frowned.
Is everything you drink a lager?
Is that rare or something here? Maura asked as she sat beside him. Laura appeared uninterested in what they were up to.
We only brew it in the winter, and it's only really popular in the Empire. Even then, nothing has the same amount of pop that this has.
Nathan shook the bottle and watched as the beer foamed up.
That's carbonation.
You mean like in champagne?
Oh, so you do know what it is, Maura said. Anyway, let's talk magic, not beer. I drink this stuff, not make it.
She settled in for what appeared to be a long lecture. Nathan wondered what he was about to learn.
Let's start with the basics. I don't know what you do and don't know, Maura said. Everything comes back to the magic that enters the world through the binding stones.
Wait, what? Nathan asked, sitting up in surprise.
Ha, you didn't know that? Yeah, the binding stones draw in magic. That's why they're the meeting points of all the ley lines. The magic they gather is transferred into the world using those ley lines, and life absorbs the ambient magic in the air, ground, and water.